And to answer your question, there is no difference between Terry Gilliam and Terry Crews.
Well, I don't see it. I see them being one and the same regardless of whichever film they're either in or directing.
Have you ever seen Terry Gilliam make his tits bounce up and down? It's amazing.
I've seen Terry Gilliam do many things, and once you get past the third or fourth hundred viewing of Baron Munchausen, you're just game for all ends.
Yep.
So, we've talked about a couple of great directors that have really had a long-standing history and are still producing good work. I think we're both looking forward to Wolf of Wall Street when it comes to Scorsese, but what do you think about some of the directors that, you know, and you even mentioned it a little earlier when you were talking about Prince of Darkness, that in the past have just made films that have connected with so many audiences. Like, let's say, what do you think about the state of George Romero, John Carpenter, Roger Corman, guys like that today, and what they're doing and what they're making, and how they have to deal with all of the issues that go into making a film right now?
All of the above are dinosaurs.
Yeah.
There is no place right now for those guys. I mean, we saw even though they're still capable. I mean, Joe Dante did The Hole, which is fine.
Yeah.
Those guys are all capable, but, you know, they're a product of a different era. You know, unless you pair them with a DP and an editor that are just shit hot, and then it stops being their work. So, I mean, Carpenter is a legend, and he had a period that is unparalleled in terms of being, you know, he's the master of tone. Like, it's all tone. There's, like, not a lot of pizzazz to his filmmaking, but as far as creating a tone, there was very few people that have had his skill. Romero, you know, the funny thing about Romero is he's only made a few really great movies, and he's made a lot of decent movies.
I think Knight Riders definitely falls into the great category.
Bruiser. Fucking Bruiser. No, but
Martin.
Yeah. That's the one with the fucking guy who's fucking doing that shit.
And these guys, they have that history. They still have, you know, even like you mentioned, Fangoria, the niche readers, that hardcore horror audience who's always looking for the next Tom Savini work, that are just following them pretty much till the end.
Yeah.
These dinosaurs that are out there that are still working, do you think there's really anything left in them? Because you look at a few of the directors of the past who wound up just sort of opening their wheelhouse into working into these great epic films and then just leaving the world. Like, say, for example, you have the end of Kubrick. Do you think these guys are going to have their last hurrah? Do you think they're going to have their Akira Kurosawa moment and just leave the world?
And honestly, there are certain guys I think are definitely capable of it. I don't think Carpenter wants – I don't think he's got the drive to do that again. But and Romero, too. I mean, like, those guys have – you know, and honestly, after watching, like, Diary of the Dead and Diary of the Dead 2 and Survival of the Dead,
yeah.
I don't care. It's like you've had opportunities. You're obviously – you know, you've been passed. You know, the torch has been passed. I mean, I like Land of the Dead a lot, but that's it. I mean, like – let's not pretend that these guys are what Kubrick was. I mean, Kubrick was a once-in-a-lifetime talent.
True.
And these guys were able to be vital parts of a genre that was always cheap. Even when Hitchcock was doing horror, it was cheap.
Yeah.
So, like, it's great. My life is changed forever by their stuff, but you can't compare. It's like Scorsese, you can't say, you know, nothing against Joe Carnahan, but, like, you know, he did a couple of crime flicks, but he isn't Scorsese. And,
sure,
you know, it would be tragic if we didn't get some coda to Scorsese's career or Spielberg or, you know.
I think we're getting it right now. I think it's all in the works.
And honestly, I think it's near because there's only a few guys who I think are able to. I can't see some of these guys just phoning it in, you know. I mean, Eastwood still is making relevant stuff at an advanced age, but these guys, the amount of years it takes to make a movie, it's crazy. Ridley Scott is different because he's able to just fire and fire and fire, and he's not a writer, So he's able to just, you know, throw a few projects into the mix, and when one's ready to shoot, he shoots it and moves on to the next one. But you can't do that with Scorsese. You can't do it with Spielberg. You can't do it. You know, there's a lot of those guys that don't have that. But
who just get so involved? Albert Pyun.
I mean, there's so many guys that just can't do it. Yeah.
What do you think that really boils down to? Is it something that you consider to be a huge factor, whether or not a director is hungry, if he needs that film to be great, if they just have that drive? Is that one of the biggest factors in whether or not it's going to be a film worth watching? Do you think that, you know, they got to want it as opposed to just coasting and letting it happen?
No, I think it. I think honestly, I don't mind watching. If Scorsese wanted to do a Long Came a Spider, I'd love to see that movie.
Sure.
You know, because, and as far as being hungry, I don't think that's the case, because there's, if they wanted to, they could direct episodes of Sons of Anarchy or, you know, whatever. Like, they could find houses for their work. And it's a, you know, if you're able to do that, if you're able to adapt, then that's great. I mean, Frank Darabont, like, one of the cool things that he'd said was when he had shot episodes of The Shield, it completely helped redefine his approach to making film. You know, when he did the Mist, it was very heavily influenced by his work in TV. So these guys, there's no such thing as slumming. I mean, that's in the eye of the viewer anyway. There's no such thing. I mean, like, those guys have a job to do. They're getting paid. They're getting experience. They're working with people. You know, they're in the trenches, whatever. It's not slumming, you know, so that I think that's kind of cool, because we tend to put them on a pedestal, and in reality, unless they, you know, there are a few guys who are divas in that respect, but I think it's work, you know, those guys are working, and I just love the idea of seeing that, and the cool thing is like, TV now has become that place, like watching Rian Johnson do what he's doing on TV, watching John Dahl, who I love, work in TV. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, unless you're a rarefied piece of work like Spielberg or Coen Brothers, or, you know, most guys are just happy to work. And the ones that are energized by it and don't look down on any gig, it's kind of interesting to see what they're doing, you know, because more often than not, the fun happens in the smaller margins anyway, because there's not as many people watching or paying attention or keeping you in balance, so... Can you imagine if Scorsese, like, just on a whim did an episode of fucking Terriers or something?
Be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Boardwalk Empire is a bad example, because that was the first episode of a show that had a lot of hype.
Yeah.
You know, if he directed an episode now and nobody knew about it, I bet you'd have a lot of fun.
I'd like to see it. Now, talking about television now, we just had one of the, and you've definitely been vocal about this.
Oh, God, Real Housewives of... Oh, you're talking
Real
about
Housewives of Cthulhu.
Real Housewives of Albuquerque.
So, Breaking Bad is done. Breaking Bad is over. Do you think that is the pinnacle of television, or do you think there's any future beyond this?
I mean, could possibly
raise the bar or be even better in some way.
I guarantee there will be better shows that are better directed, better written, better acted. But for me, at this moment in time, for me as a person, it was perfect. You know, that's the thing. It's like, it's very hard to... I was offended when people weren't watching it on a Sunday night. Like, I was offended. I was like, what the fuck? You're feeding your kids? You're watching football? You're getting laid? Fucking Breaking Bad's on right now. Or if they have iTunes. You have iTunes and you're not using it to watch Breaking Bad, you're a fucking cunt. You need to die. You know, and that's the thing, is because it was the right show at the right time in the right circumstances for me, you know, so it was perfect. But yeah, absolutely. You know, and while I don't think it's fair to say, to compare like how somebody experiences like fucking Supernatural, you know, if they get the same feeling that I get from watching Breaking Bad,
yeah,
I still think that their experience is less than mine, but it just seemed like it was the right thing. But I do feel that TV is on a just completely different track now, and Breaking Bad was a stepping stone and proof positive that this is where it's at. So, you know, when we have stuff, there's so many good shows out there in every genre except for horror. I think it's, you know, it's all good. It's just like saying, you know, like you watch Goodfellas in 1989 or 90 or whatever,
yep,
there will never be a better film, because that was the perfect film at the right time for me. But you look at some of the movies that have come out since, it's just, it's hard to match that emotional experience.
And it's just all about how it hits the spot at the right time. And do you think watching Breaking Bad, well, did you watch it as one episode and then a week later watch the next episode and then the week after that? Or did you ever do any of the, what's become a trend now with binge watching, just going through the whole season front to back over a weekend? Did you ever do that initially, or was that all rewatch?
I watched the entire first season as a binge.
Okay.
I had watched the pilot, I think, either right when it came out or shortly after. Thought it was cool, and it was caught up in God knows what, probably AIDS. And then I went back and revisited it, and the love was there. And then season two, I think, was the first season where I think I bought an iTunes subscription.
That iTunes Pass.
And then so at midnight, I had like four or five shows at that point that were coming out. Like, I think The Sopranos may have still been on. But anyway, there was like a bunch of shows. Like Sunday night was the night.
Sure.
And then, but by season three, it was done. Sunday night ceased to be anything but experience TV night.
Yeah.
And then I had the luck of being friends with the guy that runs the show, like the producer, like, well, not Vince Gilligan, but Mark Johnson, who is the producer. So I had the ability to go to the set and meet the guys and all that, and it completely just changed everything in terms of, like, seeing that shit at ground level and then, of course, the material speaks for itself. I could watch any episode of Breaking Bad and instantly forget how shitty my life is.
So when you were able to actually go and be on set and spend time there and talk to all the principals, was that something that you did just for the Chud audience, for everybody who follows your work and everything that gets published? Was that more your goal? Did you want to, you know, experience that and just kind of share that with everyone?
No, it was selfish. I had an opportunity, like, I've been working a lot on TV shows, trying to get TV shows made, and I was working on a possible TV show, and it was convenient. It was an opportunity to learn a little bit about what I was trying to do, see what it was like at the ground level, and also turn it into coverage. Like, the coverage justified the trip, and I was able to get it expensed, because great coverage came out of that visit. But
you look back at those articles.
Yeah,
and
yeah. It was a lot of good stuff.
Sure.
And the puppet show was magic, but no, that was work, and it was work on two levels. I was coming off. I had literally come back from producing a film, tangentially. And then instantly jump back into the world of covering films and trying to create. So it was like a weird thing. But the bottom line is seeing what those guys were able to do under the auspices of a corporate production was definitely exhilarating and liberating, and proof that, you know, I mean, that show had no right existing. You know, and it was just great. It was just great to see.
Not at all.
And those guys were having fun every day. You know, it was work, but those guys were seasoned at every moment, you could tell.
And it absolutely translates to the episodes. You can see that clearly, how everything's fitting perfectly into place, and it's even beyond that sort of lightning in a bottle thing that can be described. Really, it's, you know, one of those unique things that could be replicated, but I'm sure there's no way.
It's a lot like the Caveman sitcom.
So if you were to develop a television show that would be out there to everyone, let's say whether it's streaming or whether it's on one of the majors, what have you, do you want your audience to watch it once a week, just following along, or binge watching, which is, I guess, one of the bigger trends that's really happening right now? How do you want to deliver your product to the people whose eyes are just going to drink
it up? So honestly, I don't care if they watch it in binges. I don't care if they watch it every week or if they watch it 30 years after I'm dead. I want the ability to make it. You know, to me, it's like the thing is you know, everybody's concerned with numbers, and I think that whole number keeping is starting to evolve to where it needs to be. people didn't give a lot of respect to DVRs or to iTunes or to Amazon or to Netflix or whatever else. Now they're starting to collect those that data as like a whole, and they're starting to see just how many eyes they're seeing. But the bottom line to me is I think it, you know, I have faith in what in the material, you know, and I think that it will find a home. It may not find a home immediately, but to me, that's the fun of it. It's like, you know, seeing how people react to it. I've recently fallen in love with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, much against my will. John McCarowitz forced it on me, and I did not want to watch it. I did not want to like it. I hated the commercials. It seemed dumb, and now I get it. And it's affirming because a lot of the humor related stuff that I want to do isn't too distant from that in terms of tone. It's like, all right, well, if that, you know, I'm not as good as they are, but if, you know, there's a home for that kind of stuff, it's exciting. So yeah, I just want to do it. I just want to do it and see how people react, you know, and if you know, and in a lot of respects, hate is as loud or if not louder than love. And it's, you know, as long as people are watching. But I don't care. I don't care if it's binge watch. I don't care if it's piecemeal or how they watch it, or if it's suddenly discovered way posthumously. If you know,
sure.
Because like, I'm pretty much Shakespeare.
Oh, clearly.
Yeah.
And that just, you know, permeates in everything, whether it's the written word or
Ernest Shakespeare. He's a janitor that lived in Harlem for about 16 years.
And I think one of my favorite works of his is Ernest Shakespeare, Scared Stupid, versus King Lear.
Yeah.
It's great work. When it comes down to the impact of your material on the audience, if it's something that, you know, really should be mulled over, do you want it to be just kind of thrown immediately at them before they move on to the next episode? Or do you want people to actually have to think about it and let it just sort of, work itself out in their head while they try to analyze what the hell they've just seen for a week? Do you want them to really get that time to stick with the media, or do you want them to just move on to the next thing and eventually come to an opinion after it's all said and done?
There's nothing I could write or create that would have a deep resonance with people. That's not what I'm capable of. So no, I think, if anything, it'd be if they revisit it, it'd be for like to find new little silly elements or whatever. But no, I think my stuff is pretty much on the surface, you know. And you know, I watch, you know, you watch like a Christopher Guest thing, and there's layers and layers and layers of shit, and it's, you know, it's none of it to me. Christopher Guest stuff, like, is an example of something that's not laugh out loud funny in any way. It's just clever, funny, in a really interesting way, and digs to the deepest parts of a character. I'm not capable of that kind of stuff, nor am I capable of the kind of, you know, like you watch like a Memento or a movie that's, you know, like a very something that could be very much a potboiler kind of story that's done with nuance. I don't really have that. So to me, it's like finding that, just, you know, that high that comes with it. like a Miami Blues, or, you know, just something that kind of just hits you in a spot, you know. And I think, honestly, every single person with ideas has an audience, a big enough audience in the world, to justify them doing whatever it is, even if it's Gummo, which I fucking hate, and I hate him, and I hope he fucking eats something.
So Spring Breakers isn't going to make your top five.
I bought Spring Breakers this year on iTunes, sight unseen, because I like, you know, I like trailers. I like James Franco. I like young girls'
tits
that are just borderline of age in scantily clothed. Is that a term? In scantily clothed.
In the scants.
Yeah, in their almost ass. And I didn't like it, but it was a step. It was a step towards him not being Gummo. But he's, you know. But the thing is, Gummo has an audience. Like if you release Gummo, it's going to find a home. And I consider Gummo not good. I don't consider it great filmmaking. I don't consider it, you know, everything about that movie is not for me. But I think, like, if you take Joe Public, anybody, they can make enough, they could build enough of an audience, you know. So why not me? I want to do my, you know, I want to do my special movies with AIDS.
Are we out?